eye out for the papers that you've tossed. This is Paragraphs Lost.
You're listening to Paragraphs Lost, a show where writers dig up the work from their early teens. You know, the stuff that made their parents proud enough to keep in the attic, or the fanfiction that lay forgotten on forums, brimming with ambition and unfortunately lost to the world. Each week, our guests pick a story from those years, read them aloud, and learn to forgive themselves for being 13 years old. I'm Tim Hewitt. This week,
and I still like this story.
Storm's coming. I feel like I jumped all over that before everyone started to use that. I feel like there's always a storm coming.
You're
now.
Taking credit.
There's always a storm.
I don't think
yes,
you can
I take
credit
for the storm.
For storm's coming. I also wrote, it was a dark and stormy night before anybody else did. All right, welcome to Paragraphs Lost. Today we have Ryan O'Connell. Say hi, Ryan.
Hey, everybody.
So Ryan and I have known each other since high school.
It's really called Paragraphs Lost?
It's really called Paragraphs Lost.
That's wonderful.
I'm glad you think so. We had like 12 different titles that we were palling around with, but hopefully people like this one. So what do you have to share with us today?
So today I brought along two stories, one of which was a winner in our high school's literary magazine, one of their annual contest pieces for fiction. And it's a story called Warmth, which is a story about two soldiers in World War II in a foxhole together.
Now, I remember this story for two reasons. One, because it beat me. I had contributed a story about a man who gets attacked by an alien race of mirrors, which I thought was pretty literary at the time, and I still kind of do. So I was fairly, you know, I was peeved to have lost. But also, because I remember distinctly a year after you wrote this piece, you hated it.
And
you were like, I can't believe this one.
Yeah, it's a soldier story. And I thought, you know, this was really based on just an interest I had through a lot of middle school and high school in just World War II history. And it sounded like a conversation that I'd read out of a book or that I'd heard in a video game. So over time, I realized it was actually a lot less original than I thought it was supposed to be. So now,
was it like a lot of war movies you were watching, or was it like Medal of Honor?
I loved Saving Private Ryan. That was a movie that, you know, the first scene has its moments, but you know, that was a movie that I used to watch for fun. I just thought it was so well done.
How many times have you seen Saving Private Ryan?
More than 10 times for sure. And it's a long movie too. I had a copy on VHS that we bought when Video World went out of business. So, you know, it took a while to rewind, but we always had a copy of Saving Private Ryan.
Video World was awesome. Do you remember that 7 movies for $7 deal that they had for 7 days? We did that every week. It's why I've seen as many movies as I have.
Oh, you know, I talk to, kids nowadays and...
kids nowadays.
Which feels weird to say, but, you know, that you used to go to a video store and you'd find 30 copies of the latest release on the shelf, but you couldn't get a copy because they were all empty.
They were all out, right?
Which is so surreal to them now.
That, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. But no, yeah, there were times when you just did not have access to the thing that you wanted.
Mm-hmm. I spent those years, I learned a whole lot of history about World War II that comes up every once in a while in conversation. Like, where did that come from?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was just this interest that I had for so long, and eventually it kind of realized itself in a piece of fiction, which really is a composite of a bunch of different things I was reading about in books and seeing in movies at the time. So, mm-hmm. You know, certainly it doesn't come from any personal experience, but, you know, it was a fun thing to write at the time. Good exercise in dialogue, I thought.
Did you continue to write about World War II, or was this sort of the end of that fascination? Or
I don't think I ever wrote anything, you know, historical like that afterwards. I think this was the one piece I actually wrote for World War II. After that, I kind of went back to fiction, you know, in our day and age, and a lot more science fiction. After this, I kind of went into a poetry swing for the rest of high school and didn't really come back to fiction much until I got to college. So this is kind of a last hurrah for a while, I thought, you know.
So tell me more about high school Ryan as a person and then as a writer. Like, what do you think motivated you to write? What was your interest?
I mean, I'd always had a steady diet of reading and writing growing up. So that had always been an interest of mine personally. And when we got to high school and they started to offer actual courses in it, I was just chomping at the bit to jump in. So I'd always had an interest myself. And it was nice to actually have classes to motivate me to get in a habit of more regular writing. You know, up to that time, it had been more inspirational writing than anything, which I realize now a lot of it is just habit, putting your butt in the seat. And, you know, it took classes like the one I wrote this one for to actually motivate me to do stories start to finish. A lot of starts, but very few finishes. And this is one of those that actually did kind of realize itself. So,
all right. Well, let's read Warmth. I know you have another story after this one, but let's have you go through Warmth.
All right. So this is Warmth, winner of Inner Visions Fiction 2005.
Bastard.
Warmth. Storm's coming. Do you hear it? The forest was calm at 06:30. It was always calm at this time. Wind wending through the sweet-smelling pine canopy, carrying the occasional shot and noise of men from their foxholes nearby. The enemy slept now, knowing they would not be attacked. Someone muffled a cough. The shells would come when the enemy decided to wake. For now, though, the forest was still. Just feel it, that's all. He scratched the stubble around his neck. Babe looked up. See, that's, yeah. Through the green branches, the sky was hidden above a veil of white smoke or mist. Maybe it was just clouds. He doubted it. He didn't know. He didn't know how Elias could guess about things like that, like God whispered the weather into his ear. He was always right. Babe glanced for his poncho and remembered where it was, in their previous abode, further up the line, where the bodies lay. Oh well, he was always wet anyway.
So I like the name Babe. How long does it take you to come up with a name?
These, I can distinctly remembering, they were drawn from two different places. Babe just felt like the kind of nickname you give to any World War II, you know, new guy on the line.
So just a coincidence that Babe the Pig movie came out, you know, around the time.
I feel like that was much sooner than this. Or much earlier than this. But, you know, it just, I don't know, it's like one of those Sonny Jr. Babe, just seemed to make sense. Elias was distinctly inspired by that band Dispatch that had that song in general. And who everyone was singing and anybody who could play guitar was trying to mimic Dispatch. And Elias, I think, was one of their songs that got played a lot at coffee houses.
Right.
And so for lack of a better name, somebody who would be kind of a leader sort of character for this. It just seems strong and in the moment.
Right.
Made sense.
Okay, all right. Keep going.
Babe.
See, so I should have backed it up. It's like, you know, you have the cues here that this is a military thing. I like the timestamp in the first sentence. Like, okay, this is a military thing. The enemy sleeps at night, which, I don't know. Like, where did you get that from? Because I'm not sure that that's true, that the enemy is always just sleeping over there. You don't have to worry about chills at night.
No, I don't know. And that's probably not the case at all. but it made sense. I didn't need any shooting, so needed to be still.
People sleep at
people
night.
Go to bed.
And they talk to Babe.
Yep.
Babe!
Which, you know, years later becomes its own arrested development thing. Okay. Babe? Huh? Was she nice? Was she good to you? What do you mean? I've seen you looking at her. You got her picture in your helmet. Babe sniffed and looked up again. What make you think of that? Elias stayed silent for a bit, still scratching. Dunno, just, I get kind of lonely at night. when there's no patrol going. I seen you looking at her.
Oh, jeez.
From somewhere came a casual call for a medic. There was a shuffling nearby, and one appeared and walked toward the source. Nice to know there was one close, just in case. Yeah, she was nice. She and I'd... He cut himself off. What? Elias asked. Babe turned to him. They were both about the same age, both property of the army. Both wore the same uniform, made colorless by soot and mud and blood and sweat. One had brown eyes, the other blue. He grinned. Now, why are you asking all these questions anyway? Elias looked around. Sometimes I feel cold. When I seen you staring at her, you get this warm look about you. I just want to get warm, too. Food and socks don't help none. Can't have no fires. Do you feel warm when you see her?
So, I don't think this is what you meant at the time, but it does sound a little bit to me like Elias is coming on to Babe a little bit here.
God, yeah, that was not the intention. Yeah.
I feel like this was a more innocent time for us, like, reading this.
You know, and I think this came right on the heels of Mice and Men, too.
Oh, really?
Do you get a George and Lenny sort
of
thing?
Yeah. Well, who's Lenny and who's George?
Elias seems to be the Lenny character. He's curious, and George seems to be the Babe here, actually.
You know what it puts me in mind of? Is the, kind of like a not funny version of Eric Idle going wink wink nudge nudge.
Yeah, this was very innocent. Yeah.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just like the dot 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 after yeah, she was nice, she and I'd, and then just cut off.
Yeah, there is a lot of trailing off in here.
Well, they're tired.
It's been a long day of boring. You know, this was really a big exercise in dialogue. I think more than anything, that's what pleased me about the story. And looking back, it's kind of the most embarrassing part now. No.
it's better than a lot of, like, the dialogue. It's
not too bad for middle of high school.
No, you're thinking about
this
it.
This is okay.
Yeah. All right.
All right, let's see. Babe made it look like you thought Elias was crazy. Yeah, I do. Oh, it's good. You know, he paused to take off his helmet and passed it to Elias. I took her to a picture show once, see? He pointed. This is what she was wearing. Pretty little dress. It was red and white, like a nice dessert or something. We gone to see Mae West. Her daddy took this at her house before we left. Nice place they had on the outskirts. It was summertime. She was real happy, having a date and all. I can't get why she couldn't find one till I come along and ask her. Such a beautiful girl. Her hair was all done up nice-like. She's pretty.
So, if you guys have now seen a World War movie before, and you're familiar with the tropes that may have inspired this story, I think we can make some conclusions right now about the end and where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
But keep going.
It's going exactly where you think it is. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I... He smirked once, then again louder. I take my pa's new car that night. I'm looking around, driving, feel it all good, and then done running into a barn. He bursts out, laughing at this. Elias giggles a bit, too. Yeah, Babe sighed. Yeah. But then she turned the motor off and looked me in the eyes. Angel eyes they were. Elias watched him.
Is so into this.
And then we sit there, all in the quiet, hay moving in the wind, all the cows in the field, and not a light but for the farmhouse nearby. The stars were out that night, millions of them. And she looked at me, and I seen her eyes twinkling. We get all cozy-like, and she kisses me, all soft. He ended in a whisper. They sat in silence for a while, staring at the earth of their foxhole. The sky swirled around in a haze, but never really changed. Someone muffled another cough, then another two in quick succession. Sometimes, Babe said quietly, sometimes I forget. I forget her hair and the smell of her perfume. I don't get warm. It's this that's doing it. What's doing? This, he continued, raising his hand around the hole and dropping it. All this. This goddamn war. Every bit of it. And I never want to forget her. Never. Goddamn war. Amen. Amen. Elias looked at him. What's her name? Her name? Babe repeated, changing positions. Yeah. Well, her name be Minnie Mouse. He said, shook his head. I gotta keep some things to myself, or there ain't nothing worth more, see? He took the helmet back, glanced at it once, then fit it snugly back upon his head. He unscrewed his canteen with yellow fingers and drank deeply.
This is Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan.
Gotta keep some things to yourself. Yeah. Dish it out at the right time, yeah. Elias leaned back and gazed upward. Wish I knew a Minnie Mouse. She'd make you real warm, wouldn't she? Goddamn right.
That's the quote of this story.
When Babe laughed, the whole company poked their heads from foxholes, as if marveling at a sunlight they'd never seen before. Like men who'd been left in a dungeon for years, forgotten. Cigarettes hung limply from dry lips, and sallow eyes blinked. Some even stood and looked around, leaving their gray rifles on the ground. A sergeant, alone in his crater, began to cry. The tears washed grime from his face. The laughter echoed and died in silence. Storm's coming, said Elias. Shells began to whine and scream overhead, and soldiers were shaken from their trance as metal missiles made the ground vomit rock and root. The trees burst apart in a violent rain of splintering shrapnel. Some were too late in reacting and fell bleeding. The medic ran from his hole and began treating them. The end.
That's sad. See, this is why you don't assume that the enemy's not going to attack at night, though. All right. So, you know, this story is... I thought it was sweet at the time, and I think it's sweet now. What do you think made you not like it so quickly? What was...
I think, you know, and I'm looking at notes that I got on this from a high school teacher, and there's one line in here that just says, corny, is one of the notes, and I think that kind of speaks to the feeling I started to get. Did I start to rake around the corn too much?
There are some moments of overreach.
It's got its touching parts, I think. I think it tries to pack in a lot in a pretty short span here. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want that gut punch when do both of them die at the end?
I have no idea. I never really answered that for myself.
I mean, definitely the guy talking about his fiance, girlfriend, Minnie Mouse, his Minnie Mouse back
home. Minnie Mouse, yeah. Uh-huh. And I think I left it as, you know, this is just business as usual. This is the kind of exchange that happens in every foxhole, every night, somewhere on the front.
You know, I feel like that's true. These are two very young and innocent boys. Mm-hmm. I've heard, I don't know, eighth graders have more explicit conversations than this. Mm. But there's something very sweet about it. And I still like this story.
Storm's coming. I feel like I jumped all over that before everyone started to use that. I feel like there's always a storm coming.
You're
now.
Taking credit.
There's always a storm.
I don't think
yes,
you can
I
take
credit for the
storm.
For
storm's coming. I also wrote, it was a dark and stormy night before anybody else did.
Now, why is it a dark and stormy night? Why not a stormy and dark night?
I think, well, that's...
Something
that's,
to do with the cadence, maybe?
Well, there's like a whole order of adjectives that people have that are like coded into English. I don't have it in front of me right now, but that's a thing where, the type of adjective it is, depending on what it's describing, will come first. Mm. And then there was this also, ping pong, the... I sound will always come before the O sound, so you'll never hear a word like pumping.
Yeah, I get the sound part. I'd be curious about, you know, that certain descriptors have to come or before or after others to have it make sense. You know, color before sound or, you know, however it goes. Mm-hmm. So, listeners, if you think that stormy and dark night sounds better, please write.
I don't think stormy and dark sounds right. You can start. You might be avoiding the copyright issues if you go for that. Mm-hmm. So they say storm's coming and a shell hits the foxhole that they're in. where they're sleeping?
Or at least it just starts to fall around them. Right. I didn't write this intending them to be dead at the end.
Really? Because that was totally my assumption that the first time I wrote this and even now.
Yeah, I don't think I ever answered that question for myself.
Uh-huh.
The way I'd written this, though, was to almost write it as if Elias, and I thought this at the time too, kind of has a sixth sense about what's about to happen, because it opens with storms coming and it ends with storms coming. And I don't think that I ever really, I don't know, I never took it further with the story like this at all. But mm-hmm. anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, I just hope Elias finds his babe someday.
I thought they were both okay at the end. Everybody kind of assumed that they didn't make it out, but, you know.
You might have won this story because everybody assumed that they didn't make it out. And, like, if you'd had that author note that, and then they both survived and lived happily ever after.
Yeah. It wasn't supposed to be a sad story. It's supposed to be a happy one.
I feel so bad that I just assumed that they were dead. Mm. Because they were soldiers and because he was talking about his girl back home.
Mm.
All right. Well, we can move on to the next one. What's this next one about?
So this next one I am less attached to. I think this one was more of a portfolio piece that I needed to, you know, have. I had like 4 stories out of 5 and I needed a 5th story. So I have a feeling this is, because I don't remember writing this, is something I just banged out in one night.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, probably makes it an even more interesting one to read, because I really don't remember this one much.
Right.
It is I think this was an exercise in fear, suspense, not quite horror, but trying to build suspense in a story. And I can just remember just on a leaf through here that it was inspired by a scout trip where a tent mate and I, we thought that we had actually camped on something's hole or burrow. Because something kept moving around our tent all night, and this kind of took it in a fictional direction.
Oh, jeez. I feel like everybody in Scouts has a story like that.
Yeah,
like
more than one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is In the Tent. What is it? Something is out there.
Storm's coming.
There's a storm coming. Yeah, there's always a storm.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I am pleased about is even back then, I didn't beat around the bush. I always got right to it.
No, these are cold opens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it? Something is out there. Something is out there and nobody else can hear it moving. My eyes are closed, but I can see it. I can clearly see its figure dancing, praying within my pupils. I wait until I hear it again. Then I will wake Marvin. I do not know the time. It could be 1, 2, 4 in the morning. I dare not check my watch, for that would mean to move my hand out from inside my sleeping bag. Therefore, noise. It would like the noise. It would be enticed to draw nearer.
Jesus.
You know, I think I wrote this after my first, like, Cormac McCarthy experience. There's not a contraction to be found. And a lot of repetition, too.
Right. I'm intrigued.
Wind blows against the material beside my head. My teacher wanted me to be more descriptive. He wrote nylon above that. I try to remember the camp before I turned in for the night. There is a small fire pit some 10-odd yards from here. In it lies the crew's water bottles. I recall they are the only bottles that have contained milk or juice, for no matter how many times they are washed thereafter, the scent remains. That is why we do not keep them in our tents, to prevent things like this from happening.
That is such a good observation. Was that true in Scouts?
That was true, yeah, yeah. Depending on where you go to camp, if it was, you know, real heavy bear country, you know, they had time restrictions on when you could brush your teeth, so you wouldn't wake up kissing a bear, and, you know, certain things would have to go up into the bag.
Do bears go after your mouth if you haven't brushed your teeth?
If you have brushed your teeth. Minty toothpaste is, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Again, I don't know if that's just a tall story, but that's what we were always told, so. You know, anytime after 4 or 5, even if it was before dinner, try to avoid brushing your teeth. And then your water bottles, too, if you'd put anything in them other than water, they were thought to attract bears, even if you were to wash them out again and again. Milk or juice or things like that.
All right, all right.
But I have no bottle here. Nor do I have food or wrappers or toothpaste. No, they are all inside a bag, hanging high above the ground across the site. So why does it linger here? The green cooking fly is strung between two trees near the fire pit. Beneath it is an old wooden picnic table, upon which are strewn camp stoves, mess kits, and playing cards. An unlit lantern sits at the end furthest from me. The tents stand away from the kitchen. They are an irregular assortment of colors and shapes, about five in all. I hear no noise from them. Perhaps everyone else hears it moving outside. Perhaps they are silent, listening as well.
What does this note say on the bottom here?
Anyone who's been camping can identify with the narrator's anxiety. So there's this, you know, thin piece of fabric between you and everything outside, but it's that thin piece that is, you know, creates such complete unknowing.
And it, whenever you're in an enclosed space, you always, like, you feel like you shouldn't be able to hear things, and more importantly, that people shouldn't be able to hear you out. But there's no sound. It's like you are mm-hmm. still outside. Yeah. Gotcha.
And you know there's other people right out there, and whether they hear the same thing or not, you don't really know. But especially on trips like this, you never wanted to be that guy that called out.
That called out that there was something out there?
I think there's something out there, guys. Uh-huh. You never wanted to be that guy. You always wanted to be the guy who said, go to bed.
I would have been that guy every time. I'm still kind of that guy.
I should call them. No, I should not. What if they're not awake? What if my words are heard by it rather than them and they sleep on? It will know of a presence in this tent. So I will wait here and think and let my nightmares consume me.
So by it, we mean the clown, right?
You know, I don't think that... I take that back. That was on my radar. I had not read the book at that point. But I can distinctly remember a mutual friend of ours in the middle school locker room calling in the praises of it again and again and again, that this is a book you just had to read. So I don't know, maybe it was, but there's no capital I, so that, uh-huh. There's something.
I mean, my bet thus far is on Bear, but like, I remember you had a bit of an imagination for monsters at the time. You were reading Stephen King.
Oh yeah, but I, you know, and to this day, I don't think I've read it in one, like, session, start to finish. Because uh-huh. It's, you know, it's got a lot of stuff tacked on.
Right.
But yeah,
it's a book that's 300 pages too long.
Yeah, it's got a lot to it.
All right.
Sean, a whisper. It could not have heard. Sean?
I'm just like imagining. It's not even the it clown. It's just like a normal clown.
That's
or a mime, even worse. Yeah. Yeah.
What? I reply. Can you hear it out there? I'm relieved. Now I'm not alone in my plight. Yes, Marvin, I can. I don't know why I called him Marvin.
He's doomed. Marvin's not going to make it.
What is it? He is expressionless. Dunno. We wait for a noise. The trees outside bend painfully in the wind. They are old men with spines, old spines. Their limbs agonizing from the cold, bitter air. I do not know what the sky looks like. When I retired to my warm sleeping bag, the sun had just submerged completely behind the gray western hills. It had been cloudy. The moon was obviously concealed, for I saw no light through the material. A noise. A foot crushing the snow. A heavy foot. A misjudged movement. Marvin says nothing. Neither of us move. I can see it more clearly now. An ageless behemoth, a primeval thing forgotten by evolution. It would tear the tent to shreds. My heart bounces around in my empty chest. I have to remember to breathe. All of my senses are attuned and focused, listening for the next footstep. The world is silent. Even the trees stop moaning. Again, another noise. More crushed snow. It is becoming confident. Sean? Marvin whispers. Sean, what is it? I do not reply. He sounds oblivious to the potential danger. Another step. It is not the thing outside of the tent which frightens me. It's the deadness of the tent around me.
Okay. First of all, absolutely the thing outside of the tent frightens you.
I know, but, you know, we're coming up to the end, and it was going to be too short, and I knew that was the comment I was going to get, so you got to stretch it somehow. That was always my problem, was length.
Uh-huh.
I just, you know, I had to step back and kind of...
So this is a whole another page here, and you've got to figure out how to stretch the tension of a bear. See, I envision two possible ones right now. You have the actual bear you have, or whatever monster it is, or this is like the scoutmaster who opens the tent, and then the tension's gone. And I'm kind of remembering you as a writer back then, and I feel like the cute ending is where this might be going. Do you recall?
I think this was just after I saw The Village, too.
So that's, oh, really?
That might be where the monster thing is going here.
Uh-huh.
Let's find out. It's not the thing outside of the tent which frightens me. It's the deadness of the tent around me. My boots lay frozen in the corner, their laces bent at strange angles, twisted like jagged metal. The book I've brought sits on top of my legs. I cannot not see it for fear of moving my head. Is that a typo? I can imagine it, though. Its dark, meaningless title, finger grease smeared on the glossy finish, the pages left to read, the cover unopened. I remember the last line I'd read, and in the darkness, I forgot the rest. It is strange how it takes so many words to affect us in any way, and yet the word darkness. My head rests upon my gloves, serving as a pillow, black and unoccupied. A ghost could slide them out from underneath my skull. The air in the tent around me is perfectly clear, transparent, unobscured by tension. The picture of finality is one so detailed and complete. $10 word of finality. Oh, finality.
Wait. Ryan, in trying to stretch this out, you pointed out that you can see through air.
Yeah. And you know what I really like about this is the frozen boot laces, actually. That's a nice touch. I can remember that happening all the time in scouts for winter campouts. And I don't know, jaggedness, you know, not being able to perform the job that they're meant to do, just sitting in the corner there. That's, you know, actually, I'm okay with that. That's a nice little touch.
Oh, there are solid observations in this story. I'm just not sure that the air is clear is one of them.
The night was hot.
A storm was coming.
There's not a whole lot much more to say. Yeah, storm's coming. Speaking of which, the air is here. Here.
What the hell does that mean?
It is with me, the air. Wow, this is, okay.
Is the air the monster?
Perhaps the noise is only the air.
The air is the monster.
No, I must not even consider such things. If I leave this tent, it will know. It will come for me, no matter how agile my sleepy legs are. And what about Marvin? Marvin. His body lies to my right.
His head Martin.
Is beside mine, yet I feel farther away from anyone than I have in my whole life. I move my eyes and can just barely see tufts of his hair sticking up from under his wool hat. Like the shoelaces. His body is still. His sleeping bag is yellow. A sick color, now acrid in my mind. Another step. This time, a twig snaps underfoot. It's becoming careless.
It's just air.
The ground beneath me is cold, despite my pad and space blanket. They insulate nothing. The earth drains me of body heat. I realize that I have a rock under my back. It chills my heart with a piercing, frigid vigor. The tent zipper is closed fully, no escape. The line seems frozen together. It suffocates the atmosphere around me. The tent is so small, my legs can barely stretch out fully inside of it. It is red. I give a short yelp, loud and strong. Maybe I can scare it off. Sean, what are you doing? I listen for a long while. There are no more footsteps. Sean? I think it's gone, I say. It was scared. Whatever.
Well,
I'm going out. I've got to hit the head.
Oh, Marvin, no.
I think about stopping him, telling him that it is not yet safe, but he is gone before I can say anything. I hear nothing else for a while, just Marvin humming to himself as he does his business. Then I see that the fly is open. I can see outside to where the trees are. There is suddenly new air pouring into the tent. I breathe normally. There is a way out. Then I see the footprints outside the zipper, longer and deeper than that of a man. There is also a way in. I listen as Marvin returns. His footsteps grow louder, louder and heavier. I close my eyes as a claw appears before the entrance.
All right, I was wrong. You know, I was wrong. That's not the cute ending.
But I think, you know, looking back at this, that claw, I think if I left that out, it would have been a much better story.
I don't know. Well, okay, so first of all, I don't know why Sean has assumed that the he has scared away the monster having not heard any more footsteps. Because if you hear footsteps in the snow and then you don't hear any more, that means that it stopped, mm-hmm. right? So what I'm saying is that this is an attempted murder of Marvin. Because, mm. well, not an attempted murder. It's like where you're okay with sending like a sacrificial pawn out.
Yeah, we don't know much about, you know, how they got paired up as tent mates for this, or,
uh-huh.
you know, what one thinks about the other. Mm-hmm. But if with a name like Marvin, you know.
No. He had to go. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm sort of afraid that you're going to tell me now, after the ending of the last story, that both of these people survive and they go on to live happy lives.
I sure hope so. That would be nice. You know, I'm actually happier with this than I thought I was.
You know, it's really, it's not bad as much as you say that you were extending the story. I don't think it pushes too far.
This is definitely a Stephen King story, though.
Less Cormac McCarthy, more Stephen King.
I can tell what was on the menu at this point in my life, for uh-huh. sure.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was reading a lot of Stephen King at the time as well, because this was for high school and for the same class, and it was the same thing that mm-hmm. had that, the same reason I wrote that mirror story that I was telling you about.
I think this is about the time that I read Stephen King's On Writing as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a big, big influence.
Mm-hmm.
And really kind of brought me back to fiction there for a little while. So.
And what did the teacher's note say on this one? This is Mr. Ewers still, right?
Yep, so let's see. A lot of it is mechanical. The end of it, you can tell I'm starting to get sloppier because he's pointing out mistakes that I normally wouldn't make.
Mm-hmm.
Lays versus lies, confusing the kind of van versus then that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
What else did he say? I like how you shift from the monster to the narrator's immediate surroundings. So he actually liked the boots in the tent part there.
Mm-hmm.
He liked the air.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ewers loved your writing. We were
very similar writers, yeah. I feel like, too. He didn't like the last section. Needs work. Marvin was scared before, and now he's suddenly reckless. That's a good point. What is out there? Take time to work out this last section. And I have an answer to all of that, and it's that this was probably due the next day, and I just needed to wrap it up.
It was 10 a.m. Yeah. You were in AP classes. You probably had some, like, more important homework to get to.
Yeah, that last page or two starts to giddy up a little bit faster than I think it ought to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Marvin does change. I don't explain the change of behavior.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
The rest of it I can live with, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it was all that established that Marvin was all that scared. Sean might have been projecting.
Mm.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing these stories.
Sure.
How do you feel about these now? How do you, like, look on yourself as a writer back then?
Well, I'm seeing 10 years on or so, this was not bad.
Uh-huh.
This was not bad for high school. Mm-hmm. And I wish that I wrote as regularly now as I did back then, because I'd probably have so much more to show for it. So
mm-hmm.
this is a nice reminder that habit is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Ryan. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening. If you have a story you want to share, or at least get off your chest, you can contact us at paragraphslostshow@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @paragraphslostshow. Our theme music is by Haley Hewitt.